We are thrilled that you joined us today. The message you're about to hear is filled with the life-changing power of God's Word. We would love for you to share with us how God has impacted your life through this message. Visit us at riverrochester.com or attend any of our services at the River Church in Brockport, New York. Thanks again for joining us, and we hope that you enjoy today's message.
Tonight, I want to talk to you about decisions. Again, we kind of touched base on this subject when we first got into Abraham, when we were talking about his father, Terah, in Genesis chapter 11, as he was going to the land of Canaan. But tonight, we're going to look at, because I just had my baby and the birth process was fresh on my mind, I thought let's talk about the birth process for Abraham and his children, because he had two sons. He had a bunch of other sons later after his wife died, but the two sons that the Bible primarily talks about are Isaac and Ishmael. And I want to talk about decisions. I want to talk about Isaac and Ishmael and the Isaacs and Ishmaels that we create in our own life. So let's go first. The first thing that we're going to do is we're probably just going to read through these stories, and then I'm going to talk about them, and then we'll close. But go to the book of Genesis, chapter 17. In Genesis chapter 17, we're going to be reading verse 15 through 21. All right, Genesis 17, starting in verse 15. Then God said to Abraham, "As for Sarai, your wife, you shall not call her by her name Sarai, but Sarah shall be her name, and I will bless her and also give you a son by her. Then I will bless her, and she shall be a mother of nations. Kings of peoples shall be from her." Then Abraham fell on his face and laughed and said in his heart, "Shall a child be born to a man who is 100 years old? And shall Sarah, who is 90 years old, bear a child?" And Abraham said to God, "Oh, that Ishmael might live before you." Then God said, "No, Sarah, your wife, shall bear you a son, and you shall call his name Isaac. I will establish my covenant with him for an everlasting covenant, and with his descendants after him. And as for Ishmael, I have heard you. Behold, I have blessed him, and I will make him fruitful, and will multiply him exceedingly. He shall beget 12 princes, and I will make him a great nation. But my covenant will be with Isaac, whom Sarah shall bear to you at this time next year." Then he finished talking with him, and God went up from Abraham. Next, let's go to the birth of Isaac, which is in Genesis chapter 21. Genesis chapter 1, the first several verses, it says, "And the Lord visited Sarah, as he said, and the Lord did for Sarah as he had spoken. For Sarah conceived and bore Abraham a son in his old age at the set time of which God had spoken to him. And Abraham called his son who was born to him, whom Sarah bore to him, Isaac. Then Abraham circumcised his son Isaac when he was 8 days old, as God had commanded him. Now Abraham was 100 years old when Isaac was born to him. And Sarah said, 'God has made me laugh, and all who hear will laugh with me.' She also said, 'Who would have said to Abraham that Sarah would nurse children, for I have borne him a son in his old age.'" Now let's read the story of Ishmael, Genesis chapter 16. I know we're reading a bunch, and then we'll be done reading, and then we're just going to talk about these guys. Genesis chapter 16, and this is the story of Ishmael being born. We're going to read about the first 12 verses. "Now Sarai, Abram's wife, had borne him no children, and she had an Egyptian maidservant whose name was Hagar. So Sarai said to Abram, 'Now see, now the Lord has restrained me from bearing children. Please go into my maid. Perhaps I shall obtain children by her.' And Abram heeded the voice of Sarai. Then Sarai, Abram's wife, took Hagar, her maid, the Egyptian, and gave her to her husband Abram to be his wife, after Abram had dwelt 10 years in the land of Canaan. So he went in to Hagar, and she conceived. And when she saw that she had conceived, her mistress became despised in her eyes. Then Sarai said to Abram, 'My wrong be upon you. I gave my maid into your embrace, and when she saw that she had conceived, I became despised in her eyes. The Lord judge between you and me.' So Abram said to Sarai, "Indeed, your maid is in your hand. Do to her as you please." And when Sarai dealt harshly with her, she fled from her presence. Now the angel of the Lord found her by a spring of water in the wilderness, by the spring on the way to Shur. And he said, "Hagar, Sarah's maid, where have you come from, and where are you going?" She said, "I am fleeing from the presence of my mistress Sarai." The angel of the Lord said to her, "Return to your mistress and submit yourself under her hand. Then the angel of the Lord said to her, "I will multiply your descendants exceedingly, so that they shall not be counted for multitude." And the angel of the Lord said to her, "Behold, you are with child, and you shall bear a son. You shall call his name Ishmael, because the Lord heard your affliction. He shall be a wild man, his hand shall be against every man, and every man's hand shall be against him. And he shall dwell in the presence of all his brethren." So here, I know that was a lot of reading, but here we have two stories of two separate children. The first child that we talked about was Isaac, who is the son of promise. But maybe we read it out of order, but it doesn't really matter. Ishmael was the first son that was born to Abram. And Abram, when he had Ishmael, it was because he'd been 10 years in the land of Canaan, and God kept promising to Abram that he was going to give him this everlasting covenant that would be passed down from generation to generation, that he's going to bless you. And so after 10 years of trying and of waiting and of having a woman who was barren, they decided to take matters into their own hands. And so Sarai makes the decision, "Why don't you go into into my maidservant's tent, into Hagar, and we can have a child by her." And so, again, talking about decisions, here we have an example of two decisions. The first, and the result of this decision ends up between two people groups that end up at odds with each other for over 4,000 years. From the time of Abraham till now, the descendants of Ishmael and the descendants of Abraham, or the descendants of Isaac, have been at odds with each other. They both became blessed, and they both became people groups. We read the scripture where it says just now that Ishmael would have 12 princes, and he had 12 sons, and those 12 sons went on to produce many people groups. And so, basically, the descendants of Isaac became the Jewish people, and the descendants of Ishmael became the Ishmaelites, and they settled a lot of the Middle East. And up to this day, they've still been at conflict with each other. They're still at war with each other. They're still struggle with each other. And it's been a great problem. Now, I guarantee that when Abram made those decisions, that he didn't realize the consequences that were going to follow. And here's the thing about decisions. We make decisions in life, and sometimes we make decisions that seem okay at the time, and they might be easy at the time, but later they come with a great price. And we see that with Ishmael. And then other decisions that we might make, they might be tough decisions. They might be decisions that require a lot of faith. They might require a lot of persistence. They might require a lot of effort and trusting God. And the fruit of that is a decision that becomes a blessing to you for the rest of your life. And so I want to talk about these two sons. First of all, what was Ishmael? Ishmael was the product of a decision that was free and easy. What was that? Free sex, right? You see, Abram, he's the father of our faith, but he was also a man. And men, they have desires. And when, times were different back then, different principles, he didn't have a New Testament, he didn't have an Old Testament. He was living under a different time period, under a different dispensation, and so when his wife gives him this opportunity and says, "Hey, do you want to go in and have sex with this lady?" Most guys, okay, and I know I'm talking here to all holy saints, at church, we're in church, so no one, of course, this wouldn't fit anybody here tonight, but most guys, given an opportunity when they say, "Hey, free sex right here, and I won't even be upset about it coming from your wife," most guys, again, we're not talking about today under this time period as Christians today. I'm not talking about us guys. I'm talking about most guys, out there, 99 out of 100, they're not going to turn down free sex. And we'll find out, I'm going to give a bunch of examples here in a second, that most decisions that are free, easy, require low commitment, they don't require a lot of forethought and planning and whatever, that they end up costing you a lot longer in the long term, though in the short term, they kind of seem like they're okay. And then who was Isaac? You see, Isaac, he was the product of a difficult decision to stay in faith and do something impossible. You see, Sarah was Abram's wife and she was barren, meaning that she could not have children. Medically speaking, she was barren. The Bible says she was barren, which means she couldn't have kids. And so for Abram to believe that he was going to produce an heir from Sarah's wife, from Sarah his wife, was to say, I'm believing that something totally impossible is going to happen. So let me ask you, if you're at a decision place where you've been believing that God is going to do something in your life that he said he's going to do, and it's taken you 10 years to do it, or it's taken you, you've been going for this decision for 10 years, and the thing that you've been believing for hasn't come to pass, and then you have an opportunity to get the same thing that you've been desiring, and they're just saying, hey, you can have it right now for free. It's not going to cost you any faith. You can just go into the tent and have it right now. That thing will be yours. A lot of people would say, you know what? I've tried this faith thing. I've been trying for years and years. And what I've been believing for, what I believe God has promised to me, hasn't come to pass. So I'm going to take this opportunity, because most guys would look at that situation of Sarah saying, go into my tent to Hagar, as a free opportunity. Most guys would take the free opportunity and say, okay, I'll do that. But Isaac wasn't that way. Isaac was the product of something that was totally impossible, something that was going to take perseverance, something that was going to take faith, something that was going to cost him something that was going to be a long-term decision, something that was not easy. And so in life, we're faced with decisions to produce either an Ishmael or an Isaac. And then, you know, we have to live with these decisions. And many of us here tonight probably have at least one Ishmael in our life, a decision that we made that maybe wasn't the smartest decision that we've made. Maybe we did something outside of the will of God. Maybe we did something that probably goes against our integrity. Maybe something that we bought that we knew was probably a stupid purchase that could create us problems. Maybe we became friends with people that we knew we shouldn't associate ourselves with. We did something that at the time we didn't really understand what it was totally going to cost us. So Ishmaels are generally free, or at least cheap, and they're easy at first, but they cost a lot later. They require a low commitment at first, but can cause a life of entanglement, a life of problems, a life of confusion, a life of stress. Those are what Ishmaels are. So it doesn't just have to be a child, okay? I mean, the Bible, and understand I'm using this just in a figurative sense, but that's what an Ishmael is. It's a decision that it's free or cheap, it's easy at first, it doesn't require a lot of commitment. And then there's Isaac, which is going to cost you something up front. And a decision that causes an Isaac, it will cost you something up front. They're not easy decisions to make. They require a great commitment and often cost a lot up front. So, you know, you weigh out the two decisions. You know, of course, anyone can look back at Abram and say, obviously he made the wrong decision with Hagar. And look at the turmoil and the trouble that it's caused him. You know, look at the trouble that it caused for him and his wife, the arguments that they were having, the stress that it caused in their house, the generations that followed. Anyone can look back at a decision and be like, well, duh, he should have done this. But what about in the moment when you're faced with the decision? You see, the important decisions in life have to be made before the opportunity even gets there. You have to know who you are. You have to know what you're doing. You have to know your integrity and who you're called to be as a person, so that when something comes to pull you a different direction, it's not a temptation. You have to decide. Married people, that sex outside of marriage is not an option. Single people, you have to decide. Marriage, sex outside of marriage is not an option. So that way, when the temptation comes, it's not who I am. It doesn't fit with me. And so it's a decision. It's an important decision. And that's a decision that every human will make. So let's talk about a few Ishmaels. Let's just first talk about an easy and probably unoffensive example. Stupid purchases. You know, because probably everyone here, I mean, most people, I should say, have probably bought something in their life that they regretted buying later. Maybe you signed for a car and you got it financed, or a house and you didn't take the opportunity to get your house inspected before you bought it. You know, right now it's ridiculous, the housing market. You know, my wife and I were looking at houses. We put offers on 2 houses in the last couple weeks, and the market is just such in the seller's favor that people just do ridiculous things to get houses. There's one house that we liked, and our offer was higher, meaning we were going to pay you more money. But someone else came into that house, they liked it, and they put an offer on it. It was less money, but they said, we're going to forgo all contingencies, meaning no inspection, no attorney, review, no, nothing. So basically, you know, it's a $100-some-thousand gamble that what you're buying is actually going to be what you think it is. But, you know, I mean, a couple problems that you don't see in the house could end up being a huge problem. Maybe they walk through, they like the house, it's cute, it's whatever, you know, it's going to fit for them. But maybe there's a crack in the foundation that when they were looking at, you know, paint colors and carpets, they didn't see. And now they just forewent their inspection, and that can come back to cost more. And so stupid decisions when you go to buy something, it's terrible. You know, I have a sob story. And, you know, most of the time if you say sob story, you think of a sad story, right? Well, my sob story is a sob story twofold, because it was a sob car that I bought and it became a sob story. You know, I bought this car that I knew was not, I didn't know it by looking at the car, because I know nothing really about looking at a car besides that looks cool and that doesn't. And, you know, that looks rusty and that doesn't. But, you know, I looked under the hood and everything looked great. But now you look under the hood at your cars these days and everything's plastic. Everything's covered up. So, you know, I was 18 or 19 and I looked under the hood. Everything was plastic. Everything looked cool. I test drove it. Everything was fine. I drove it. Or I test drove it and I liked it. But, you know, I drove it off the lot after I signed my name on the paper, and I waived my rights to buy it as is, because I thought, this is a great car. I love it. It's great. It's European made. What could go wrong, right? And, well, a lot went wrong. Just about everything went wrong until finally I ended up, you know, a couple years later just going, you know, if I hadn't put a big down payment on it, I would have been upside down in my loan, you know, because I ended up just selling it for parts a couple years later because the transmission went on it. I used to drive down the highway in Florida on I-75 doing 80 miles an hour. And you know how Florida is, like it's sunshine and then all of a sudden 5 minutes later you're in a hurricane and then 20 minutes later it's sunshine again. Well, those storms drop so much water, the water would just, I would look into my passenger seat and at the floorboard of my passenger seat there'd be about this much water. Just like coming up, I don't know where it came up from, but it was coming up into the car. And then I can't tell you, like, the light bulbs, like, in, I mean, they're like the halogen kind that are like $20, $30 light bulbs. I mean, can't tell you how many of those I had to replace. I mean, my brother jump-started it one time and blew the entire sound system because he, you know, black to red to black. What does that really mean anyway? Let's just test it out and see what happens. And, you know, it was a real sob story with my sob. And so, but I really, I felt when I bought it that was a bad decision to make. But, you know, I just thought that was just, you know, that was just a thought. You know, I didn't take a mechanic to go look at it with me. I just thought, hey, I'm going to look so cool driving this thing. And I'd look cool driving it until I, you know, the transmission went on it. Then you don't look cool because it had the, you know, the tectonic bump shifting or whatever. That was like kind of newer technology. Now just about any car has that, where you can kind of, an automatic where you can control the shifting. But the transmission was so bad, it would only go into third gear, and then it would go into fifth gear. And if you try starting out driving your car in third gear, it takes about 5 minutes to get up to about 20 miles an hour, just with a foot all the way to the pedal. And once it would get up to 20 miles an hour, then you click the shifter, and it goes straight from third into fifth and goes ka-chunk, you know, just skips fourth gear. And, like, I mean, like, man, it was messed up, so... So stupid purchases, it's an Ishmael, you know? It was something that I had to live with for a few years. Even after the fact of making that decision, even after I realized I made the wrong decision and I should have done something differently, it didn't matter. I signed my name on the paper. And that's how those Ishmaels go. Let's talk, I mean, like another example is like, so going back to what I said about that, I mean, going into it, you know, it was an easy decision for me. Like, but it ended up costing me so much more later on. You know, I could have, if I had, you know, paid someone to come look at it, paid to take it to a shop, paid to do my homework on it, you know, done some more upfront research on it, I would have saved later, but I didn't. All right, so then, you know, in a similar kind of thing, you know, you see these places most of the times in, like, bad parts of town, but you got, like, cash advances, payday loans, these types of things, or, like, just bad loans in general. You know, I mean, those things are, they cost you up front. They basically, they're bad for a reason. They're in bad parts of town for a reason, and because, you know, smart people aren't going to go to them. But if you, you know, you spend like a percentage of your paycheck just to cash your check, well, I mean, maybe if you got like absolutely no option at the time, and I understand you do that once or twice or something, but you got to get to a point of where you don't have to do that. But that's something that costs, that has little commitment. It doesn't cost a lot up front, but over a lifetime, there's people that live taking bad loans, people that lives doing stupid financial decisions, and it ends up costing them a lot. Let's talk about something more fun. How about pornography? And, you know, I mean, you say pornography, and, like, people think, like, you're just talking to guys, but ladies get into that stuff, too. You know, I mean, it's not just for guys. I mean, guys were visual, and so maybe that, like, appeals easier or quicker to a guy, but there's a lot of people, both male and female, that are addicted to pornography. And this is like, you know, I wasn't around in the 50s, thank God. But, you know, back then, you'd have to go to a store and buy it, you know? And who wants to be that guy at the store, you know, asking, can I buy that magazine or whatever? So, you know, it's not like now anyone, you know, parents, we give our kids this technology, who knows what they're able to get on? It's... You know, my children, they are not going to have smart technology until they are much older. But so, you know, porn, for the most part, you know, to get into it, it's free. It's easy. Like I said, you can just take your phone on right now, and it's not like it's going to take a big commitment for you to get into it. You can just open up your phone, type in whatever you want on Google, and see just about whatever you want. You know, it's quick, it's easy, it requires low commitment, it's free, but it ends up costing you so much. It can end up costing you your marriage, it can end up costing you pretty much performance disorders, it can cost you mental disorders, it can cost you so much. You know, a mind that is bound, that's not something fun to deal with. And so, you know, that's why we have to make these decisions beforehand. Because there's opportunities for that just about everywhere. Our culture thrusts that stuff in front of us. So you gotta kind of make up your mind. I'll do whatever it takes to avoid getting into that sort of thing. If that means you don't go to the movie theater, if that means you don't go watch R-rated movies, if that means you don't go, you know, on the internet, you know, certain times of day, certain websites, whatever, you know, like if you're off social media, it doesn't matter what you have to sacrifice, it's going to be worth it. How about drugs and alcohol? You know, most people that become addicts, like drug addicts, they don't go out, you know, you meet someone that's a drug addict today, and I guarantee if you were to ask them, they didn't go out from being completely clean. Let's say they're 15, 16 years old, and they're completely clean, and they think to themselves, you know what, I want to go out, and I'm going to find a drug dealer, and I'm going to buy heroin. That's generally not how it happens. Most of the time, it's something free. Most of the time, you're at a, you know, it happens where somebody's at a party, or someone, you know, they just want to say, hey, let's have a good time, and they give it to you for free, and you try something. Well, you see, if you hadn't had a lot of forethought into making that decision about who you are, when that decision comes for you, and then now you're thinking about it at that time, when there's peer pressure, when there's, you know, that opportunity, maybe there's girls there or guys there that you're trying to impress, well, it's a lot more difficult to make that decision at that time. That's why you got to have You got to know who you are going into that. And then, you know, it might be free the first time that you do it. It might be free the second time that you do it. You know, I mean, it might be free to go out and drink the first time you go out, you know, or you go to a party and your friends try to convince you, hey, why don't you just, you know, drink some beer, drink some alcohol, whatever. A lot of times you get into that stuff for free. But look at what it costs. You know, if you look at drug addicts that are out on the street and they've lost everything to drugs, I guarantee you they would say that there's no price not paying to be free from that. That wouldn't be worth to pay to be free from it. And so it ends up, it can cost them their marriage, it can cost them their family, their money, their bank, their house, everything that they have, it can cost them. But it starts out free. It probably starts out with a low commitment. You know, I'll just try it this once. It'll just be like for fun. And, you know, I'm not going to end up being like a drug addict or something. But you talk to drug addicts and 99% of them didn't set out to become an addict. They thought, you know, I'm just going to do this one time. And you do it that one time and until you can't stop doing it. How about just sex outside of marriage or ungodly relationships? You know, I mean, it might seem like adventure, risque, whatever. But, you know, if you try having sex outside of marriage, that leads to a whole bunch of entanglements. You know, what happens if you have kids and now, you know, you got kids with people you're not married to, they're not committed to you. And now you're maybe a single mom trying to raise kids. I mean, it's not easy. It's a lot easier to raise them with two parents at home. But, you know, you think, well, I'm married and she's not going to find out. And so, you know, I'm on a business trip and I'll just go and no one's ever going to know about it. Till you get STDs. You know, I mean, it's a low commitment at first, but it has a lifetime cost when you start entangling in these things. And then, you know, what about just bad associations in general? You know, bad relationships, you know? When I was a kid, the times that I did stupid stuff was because I was hanging out with stupid people. When I was hanging out with good people, you know, I was doing most of the time good stuff. But I had friends and, you know, I like to get into mischief. What teenager doesn't? But, you know, if based on the people that I was hanging out with would determine how stupid the things were that I was doing. You know, so your associations, you know, that doesn't really cost you anything up front, right? Well, we're just hanging out. We're just going to go have some fun. But what if it costs you, you know, 10 years down the road and you've got a bunch of friends that are dragging you down? What if it costs you, you know, you go out to just have some fun and you end up breaking the law and going to prison or becoming, you know, you go to prison as a teenager or as a young adult, and that puts a label on you for the rest of your life that you don't want to have. So those are all Ishmaels. The goal is not to have an Ishmael. But the problem, you know, many people have had Ishmaels. We've made dumb decisions. The thing that you have to decide is, who am I? Does this fit into my personality? And then say, this is not who I am. This is not who God's called me to be. And I'm not going to have an Ishmael going forward. But the thing is, Abraham, he had to live with Ishmael the rest of his life. He made a decision. He went into Hagar. He had Ishmael. And for the rest of the life, that the consequence of that decision was there. So don't think that you can just get out of the consequences all the time. We think, oh, we're just Christian, become born again. And yes, you became a brand new creation, but there's still things that remain based on decisions that you make. And then you're not immune to making bad decisions as a Christian. How many of you have found that out? Don't raise your hand. But, you know, as a Christian, that doesn't mean you're immune to make bad decisions. And so you can still have an Ishmael as a Christian. All right, let's talk about Isaac. Isaac's, you know, I did that on purpose where I talk about Ishmael first because that's nasty. That's not fun. But let's talk about Isaac making good decisions. Let's talk about marriage. Obviously, marriage, it's probably one of the biggest commitments you can make. It's one of the most expensive commitments you can make. You can find out right away when you have to go and buy a ring. Right, guys? You know, I mean, depending on how much you can spend. But, you know, they say, I don't know, like, if this is actually true or not, but they say you should save, like, 4 months of your pay and put that towards a ring. You know, I mean, if guys actually do that, that's expensive. Pay for a wedding, a ceremony, all the food. I'm telling you, see, like I said, an Isaac up front costs you a lot. It's a big commitment right up front. You know what you're getting into right up front. But then, the opposite of the Ishmael is it turns into something wonderful.
You see, it requires commitment and perseverance. But I'm telling you, the longer I've been married to my wife, the better our marriage gets. You know, before you get married, you just think, like, the pinnacle of marriage is going to be the honeymoon. And, you know, I mean, I remember hearing, you know, married couples say that marriage and sex just keeps getting better after you've been married. And I just thought to myself, how could it be better than, like, you know, the first time for a guy going in, you know, into marriage and having sex with a wife? But the more that you become intimate in your relationship, and the more that you can trust each other as a couple, the more that you love each other, the more that you're committed to each other, and you realize that there's no shame in the marriage bed, and you just completely trust each other, sex becomes better, marriage becomes better, the more that I can trust my wife and she can trust me, and the more that our whole relationship in marriage becomes better. And so up front, it's expensive. Up front, it's a big commitment. Up front, it's going to cost you something. Up front, it's a challenge. But the longer you go with a decision to make an Isaac, the better it becomes, the more blessing it becomes. How about children? Now, I should say children inside of marriage. You know, when you have a child, that's a lifelong commitment. Most of the time. Granted, of course, there's tragic events where, you know, a child passes before a parent. But most of the time, when you have a child, that child is with you for the remainder of your time on earth. Talk about a big commitment. Right? How about expensive? You know, I mean, if you have kids, you know, my wife, I thought my wife was expensive when she went shopping for herself. That was until she started going shopping for the kids. Now it's like, you know, and now having two kids, you know, but I'm not complaining because the Lord provides, He brings increase, it's not a burden or whatever. But I'm just telling you, like, the amount that my wife spends on both of our two kids' clothes now is probably, you know, more than I used to get paid at my first job. You know what I mean? So it's an expensive commitment. And, you know, you feed them, you have to pay for all the extra stuff, and eventually I'm going to pay for them to go to school, I'm going to pay for probably car insurance, all this stuff. You know, when you have a child and you are intentional about it, I'm not talking about a whoops, I'm talking about you're intentional saying, hey, let's have this child together, that is a big commitment. It's expensive. And ultimately, it produces wonderful blessings. Granted, that probably depends on parenting skills too, but even, you know, you talk to parents that maybe, you know, feel like they screwed up with their kids, they still love their grandkids, you know. So, I mean, like, you know, eventually it still produces a blessing, even if you feel like, man, that child, that was just work. You talk to them about their grandkids and they love it. So they bring joy, they bring grandchildren, which brings joy, and so it's a big commitment up front. But it brings so much joy in the end. You know, you can talk about school, and, you know, you can talk about homeschooling or sending your kids to private school. And you might think, well, we already pay taxes so our kids can go to public school. And now I'm supposed to pay for me to sit home and teach, or for me to pay for my kids to go somewhere else, to maybe a Christian academy, if there's a good one in the area, to pay extra for my kids to go to school. But, you know, you look at our school systems today, and, you know, I mean, find out 18 years later if it would be worth it when your kids are coming home and asking what gender am I, and you have, you know, teachers telling third graders that they should experiment if they're a boy or a girl. Literally, I'm not, you know, we don't make this stuff up. This is, our society has come to this point. And so, yeah, it's expensive. It's upfront, a big commitment upfront, you know, to say, I'm going to stay at home and to raise my child and to teach my child or to pay for them to go to a private school. You know, that's a decision that my wife made. We're not exactly sure how it's going to work out, but I know that, like, and this is something that I talk on quite a bit, and it's not exactly the easiest decision to make, but you get 18 years with your kids to make the greatest impact on them that you can and to set them up for success in life. You know, let's just say that we just go cheap on everything with our kids and, you know, just hope that society turns them out okay. Well, you put all your trust in public systems and in the government and put everything in their hands, and what if things don't turn out okay? You got them for another 50, 60 years until you leave the planet. And you're going to be dealing with problems for the rest of those 50, 60 years. So you got to ask yourself, was the upfront cost worth it? You know, for me it is. I'll do whatever it takes, whether that means I'm homeschooling, Julie's homeschooling, or we're sending our kids, or like I mentioned, I don't know when that was, a week ago or so, that we start our own school. But we'll do what it takes. Let's talk about Christianity. Christianity is one of the biggest decisions that you make, walking the altar, raising your hand at an altar, saying, confessing Jesus in front of a crowd of people. That's not a decision that you can just make flippantly or lightly. And to really make that decision, to make Jesus the Lord of your life, is essentially saying that I'm completely changing my lifestyle. And so that has right away an upfront cost. Right away, it has a huge commitment. Think about the time commitment of becoming a Christian. Think about the money commitment of becoming a Christian, tithing and giving offerings and then giving of your time and so forth. And you might think that, well, you're saying that because you're a pastor. Well, I did that way before I ever was in ministry or a pastor. I've been tithing for years and years. I've been giving of my time for years and years, ever way before starting a church. That's just because that's what Christians do. That's not what ministers do. That's the job of a Christian. And so right up front, becoming a Christian, it's a big decision. But look at the benefits. You know, people might think that it's expensive to tithe, but when I'm telling you, when you meet somebody that's a tither, I promise you this. I shouldn't say I promise, but more than likely, they're not struggling with going out and spending all their money on addictions. They're probably not spending, you know, $10 a day on cigarettes. They're probably not going out to the bars and spending $50 to $100 in drinks on a Friday night. They're probably not spending money trying to get themselves out of stupid decisions that they've made. They're probably saving money. They're probably investing money. They're probably being smart, and they're probably pulling ahead in life. So you got to ask yourself, yeah, it's an upfront commitment of my time. You know, you could sleep in on Sunday morning. You could be watching TV on Wednesday night. It's a big commitment of your time and of your effort, of your money, of everything that you do to become a Christian. Right? But man, is it worth it? And not even just to say that one day I'm going to go to heaven. That's going to be fantastic. But it's worth it while I'm alive on this planet. It's worth it. I love going to sleep at night, sleeping the sleep of the righteous, not knowing that, not wondering if I have kids out there that I don't know about, not wondering, you know, how am I going to make it through in the morning, not wondering how am I going to break this struggle off my life, but knowing that Jesus has already set me free, that Jesus has paid the price for my sins, that Jesus supplies all of my needs according to his riches and glory. And the walk of faith, the walk in Christianity, yeah, it's a big commitment up front. It costs a lot up front, but it pays dividends throughout eternity. Amen? So I want to challenge you this night that when you go to make a decision, is it going to be an Isaac or is it going to be an Ishmael? And if you find that decision, you know, you come and there's an opportunity presented to yourself and it's just easy, you know, and again, I'm not saying like, you know, like if someone comes up to you and offers you, hey, I want to give you $100, do you want it or not? That doesn't mean that's an Ishmael, because, oh, it was easy and it didn't cost me anything. That's not what I'm talking about, all right? But you know what I'm talking about. I'm talking about these kinds of decisions. You know, when you come up to one of these decisions, and yeah, it might be free at the moment, and it might not be something that right at the time is going to cost you a lot, but the consequence of that decision 5, 10, 30, 50 years from now, what's it going to be? And so when we make decisions, just like Abram did, he learned from his Ishmael and he learned from his Isaac. And so, like I said, most of us have probably had an Ishmael or two or 10. But the goal is to learn from them and not make those mistakes again. And that we can have Isaac-thinking decisions where we challenge ourselves, it's a big commitment, we stay in faith, we persevere through. Amen?
Thanks for listening to this message from the River Church. We hope you stay connected with us online at riverrochester.com.